Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. We're on draft day here, but I thought it was important at 1:16 here in the morning to record my thoughts about the Rashad Bateman extension, how this might impact the Ravens draft in a way, and what we can take from it in terms of the motivations of both sides of this contract. And I think there are a lot of things being said out there, and I kind of want to put my thoughts in one place so you have it available in your thought process as the Ravens go through these first 29 picks, sweat them out before they get to pick at number 30. Anyway, thanks for joining me again. Rashad Bateman, if you haven't heard today, signed through 2026. The terms are not yet known. That is very important. I think we can discern some things about our expectations of those terms from the fact that Bateman was up for a fifth-year option, which would have occurred after the draft, the decision for which would have been made after the draft. I think because we know that and he has signed now, I think it is likely that the total dollar values do not reflect consideration for him earning the full amount of the fifth-year option as part of this contract. Now, when I say that, you could look at it as he signed for 2024, and I saw Brian McFarland, a guy I certainly very much respect, saying he's already scheduled to make whatever it is this year, maybe $3-4 million, and he's scheduled to make then $13 million on the tag, which I think is about correct. So you had about $16 or $16.5 million maybe of money that he thought was kind of the basis of the deal, and it was interesting to see how much would be added for that third year. I think the key here, I would disagree with Brian in this way, that I think the key is that the fifth-year option was communicated to Bateman as an amount they would not pay. So there was no plan to pay that fifth-year option. We get into his season in just a second in terms of how that went last year. And then the two sides had to kind of decide, okay, does Bateman just want to play here for 1 year at this amount, then hit free agency in a year, or would he prefer... And by the way, that may change the Ravens draft strategy in terms of a wide receiver. And I'm sure the Ravens are not really threatening Bateman in a way like this. But, you know, there's a come to Jesus aspect of this where they have to kind of discuss in very frank business terms, you know, the process they're going through, and that they need to consider a wide receiver in this draft. It's obviously a deep wide receiver group. Maybe not obviously it is. But anyway, I think that the Ravens still probably need a wide receiver anyway, but a commitment to Bateman is one where there's potentially divisible benefit on the table that both sides can win. Both sides maybe can be a little bit unhappy. You can obviously put some icing of incentives on this deal to make it taste more like a frosted cake. So we'll go through that in a little bit. Let's look back at a second for who Bateman was anyway in 2023 in his first couple of years, and why it's probable that the Ravens communicated to him at some point that they weren't going to pick up the fifth-year option. His stats in 2023 were particularly not good. 6.6 yards per target, a 64.1 passer rating throwing to him, 1.05 yards per route run. That's quite low for a starting X receiver. And really bad one, 2.0 yak per reception. So that's exceptionally low. I mean, we have people in the draft, obviously, are very significantly higher than this, but the people who are under six, it becomes a question of, you know, what's wrong? Why are they not breaking away more? And it is college, so, you know, you're only talking about the very best guys there. Bateman has been much more of a possession receiver, I think, than was expected. I think if you looked at this year, you saw a couple things about the relationship between him and Lamar. I'd start with the fact that Bateman was overthrown on a number of long balls this year. I felt like Lamar really there's an expression of a lack of trust in that, where he's not throwing the ball up and letting Bateman go the ball. And the juxtaposed player there is OBJ, who he was throwing it up and letting OBJ go get the ball. And OBJ had a good year for the Ravens. Wasn't worth $18 million, I think we'd all agree, but he had a good year in terms of drawing penalties and going up and get some contested balls on some of those deep shots. Bateman was not really afforded the same opportunity. I don't think it was schematic. I think it's a matter of not having a great gauge maybe in terms of how far Bateman needed to be overthrown, and maybe really wanting to avoid interceptions to a higher degree, which might reflect a lack of counterbalancing trust in Bateman to go get that football and take it away from the defender. So I think that is something I would point to as a reason why Bateman's stats were not particularly good, including that low passer rating and the low yards per target number and a lack of deep balls involved there. Qualitatively, I would also say that Bateman being alone on that left side, usually as the X, did not get as many looks as I thought he would. Now, I think most of the people within range of my voice have heard some sort of separation claims made for Bateman. I will say there are two sides of that coin. I've seen one separation stat where he's right up at the top. It's in on a PFF chart or whatnot. And another chart was only in the 30th percentile of separation. What that tells me, since I know they're going to be working with the same Cartesian XY data that the NFL provides for the Big Data Bowl, for example, I know they're working with that same data. It's a matter of at what point are they measuring separation? So it could be like a first step after the break at the top of the route where Bateman is probably very good because he's an exceptional route runner. It could be later or at the point of the catch where the story could be very different and might be much more of a contested catch receiver at that point. So I wouldn't look at the separation numbers. I am befuddled by them because I would not expect a receiver to be great on one and terrible or poor on the other. But there's something about it. There's something we're missing about the Bateman separation numbers that just doesn't really make sense. And I think it's more likely based on his low yak per reception number, yards after catch per reception, that the separation was more occurring at the top of the stem or at his first break than it was at the point of the catch. If you think about it, that would kind of make sense. If he's got low separation at the point of the catch, he's catching his balls, he's going down probably more quickly than he otherwise would. There's also a function of the type of routes he's running. If he's running a lot of digs and comebacks and routes that result in the receiver having to make a move looping even further back towards the line of scrimmage, those kind of routes result, generally speaking, in less yak. If he's catching a lot of slants where he might go to the house, or a lot of deep balls where he gets behind the defense, those routes result in much more yak. So there is some schematic component of what they're asking him to run that certainly could affect his yak. That's just an exceptionally poor number. And he should have, a number of missed tackles forced. I didn't actually look at that number, but I'm going to bring it up right now on my screen. He had 3 missed tackles forced the entire season. 2 of them were in that Week 17 game against Miami, and 1 other against Jacksonville. So he went a long time this season without even having a single missed tackle forced. And I think that had to contribute to that very poor yak number. So, when I put this all together, Bateman had a very poor year in what was really a crossroads time for him. So, I'm not saying some of this is not on Lamar, and I'm certainly not saying some of it's not on Monken in terms of scheming up some better opportunities for him to catch the ball on the run, or be the primary receiver even. But I will say Bateman did not make the most of the opportunities he did have in this year. I think if you look at what he did in terms of building some trust with Lamar, I think he probably did some things in terms of some good comeback plays to make a play on the football. But then you see a difference with a player like Isaiah Likely, and Lamar throws him up that ball in double coverage against, I think, the 49ers, or maybe it was Jacksonville, went up for a double coverage, came right back down to it as if it was nothing, went down at that point, which was okay. I don't think Lamar makes that throw to Rashad Bateman in that situation. I don't think he has that same level.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% Lean Ground Sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We'll trust for him to go up and get the football. So, unfortunate year, unfortunate time for him to have that year. It is certainly not all his fault, and I still think very highly of him as a quality receiver who can find ways to get open at the top of the stem. He has real wiggle at the top of the route. He throws that defender off, and part of it is because he runs a lot of different routes. I think he still has a very high possibility, a very good possibility of being a good receiver in the NFL. His first 2 years, it was a matter of injury. His third year, unfortunately, in this crossroads year where he's playing for his fifth-year option, it wasn't really a matter of injury. It was really more a matter of him just not getting the job done and the connection between him and Lamar not being at the highest level. Now, let's move on a second and talk about the motivations to sign now, because I think there's some really interesting indicators that are there. So when we see this happening right before the draft and being announced in this way, I think I would extrapolate from that information and say a couple of things, despite the fact we still don't know the details. And again, we're the early morning hours on draft day, we're recording this. But Bateman, I believe, felt incented to have a deal made today before the Ravens' first round draft pick at number 30 was made and might have squeezed him further out of a job. So obviously, the Ravens are not incented. And I'll say that in very strong terms, they are absolutely not incented to announce this deal today. In fact, the best situation would be make the deal now, don't announce it until after the draft, and then, keep your cards close to your vest like you would injury information during the year or any number of other things. By knowing that the Ravens are somewhat less likely, possibly, to draft a receiver at number 30, it may incent other teams to say, well, the Ravens are going to take my offensive tackle or my cornerback, both of which, by the way, are positions where the Ravens probably would want to take a quality offensive tackle or cornerback left at number 30 or even possibly several spots ahead of that. And so there's no incentive other than relative value of the deal that I can see for the Ravens to pull the trigger early with Bateman. Sure, make the deal or have it ready to go, or make it but have it in secret until after the draft. And maybe even, I don't know what you can do in terms of enforcing a secrecy clause like that, but just don't allow the information out prior to the draft, if that's what you want to do. So the Ravens tip their hand early. It's all based on value. That's what I would take for it. Now, the only other possibility is that the Ravens somehow are misdirecting. So they may really like some receiver at 30. Maybe they think Brian Thomas is going to fall to that point. Maybe they really like Ladd McConkey more than I do. Maybe they have another receiver they really want to get at number 30, and they wanted two things. One is by signing Bateman, they wanted to misdirect other teams that might even be willing to trade back and still think they could pick up a player like McConkey or Adonai Mitchell or other players who might be at the end of that first round. Maybe Coleman would be a third, who'd be at the end of the first round or early in the second round. And they think, now they're not going to take him. And the Ravens really love one of those guys and they take them. So that would be one possibility. I don't otherwise really see why the Ravens would be attempting a misdirection play of that type, but it actually seems kind of far-fetched because it's a big investment in capital potentially to do that and to have Bateman around and then reduce his value by having another receiver around who might take snaps from him is also possibly a concern. Probably not, because I think the Ravens need a third quality receiver as well on this team. So I think they will draft one at some point. And it's still not out of the question. I think that if particularly if offensive tackle and corner are largely wiped out on the boards in terms of the top seven or so offensive tackles and the top five cornerbacks, that the Ravens may be highly incented to draft a wide receiver anyway. So that would be a possibility. I'll just close with this, that the Ravens make a number of talent slash value judgments. Okay. They make them in the draft. They make them in free agent signings, and they make them in re-signings of existing players on the current roster. They have an overwhelmingly positive record of doing this properly on players that they make a deal with of any sort. And they have a probably even better record when they sign somebody early. So, you know, last year they did have a player they signed early in Broderick Washington who it might not have really worked out, but they've had a hell of a lot of other ones like Chuck Clark. That was a great signing at the price. I think Patrick Ricard might have had one such year as that. And then they've certainly had others over the history of the team, but they've largely, in terms of all financial dealings they've made and strictly judgments of talent relative to value, they've done very well on that. So I trust them to have this deal priced properly for Bateman. And I think that this could be a win for both sides. And you often hear me use the term divisible benefit. This might have been a case where Bateman really wanted security at this exact moment in time going into the draft, and the Ravens really wanted to garner a little value in this. And they probably communicated very honestly to them that they were not going to pick up the fifth-year option on him. And so I would expect the total nut perhaps to be $20 million, and you might think for 3 years, and it might be as high as, 27, 28, 29 million with incentives, perhaps. I probably wouldn't want to have quite that much in terms of dollars that I'd be on the hook for even quality play, but I wouldn't think that was too much to pay for Bateman if he was signing an incentive laden deal for what is effectively a 2 year extension on this. So we'll see what the new money is, but I think my over under on the new money would be about 16 or 17 million in terms of guaranteed or effectively guaranteed 2025 and 26 money. So we'll see how that comes out. Anyway, thanks for listening, folks. I hope you'll join us for the draft coverage, which begins tonight. And that is round one. I'll be joined by Coach Derek of All 22 Films. Really looking forward to have him in the co-host chair. We're having some other panelists coming in. Josh Reed, Alaskan sports writer, does a lot of really interesting work on the draft, especially really understanding who the UDFAs are that the Ravens may want to be targeting, so that he'd be a guy who'll be joining us. And we'll also have an ex-defensive lineman and friend of mine, Brandon Croxton, coming on the show tomorrow. We encourage participation. We're going to have a live stream going on. I will post links to it today if you haven't already seen them yesterday, and you'll be able to ask questions directly of us in terms of why do we think the Ravens did such and so. But that's the point of the entire show, is how does this pick, meaning all the first 29 and then the 30th, affect the Baltimore Ravens? We're not really looking to understand any human interest stories about the players that other teams drafted, or what somebody had for breakfast, who was Caleb Williams had for breakfast while he was waiting to hear that he was the number one pick. I could care less about that stuff. For me, it's other AFC North teams. What do they draft? Is that serious? And how did this impact the Baltimore Ravens? So we'll be looking at that. Hope you'll join us on draft night. I'll be doing the shows all three nights with different sets of panelists. On the second night, we'll have Voss as the co-host, who is a, from Friday Morning GM, an outstanding person with whom to discuss franchise building issues. A number of fine panelists that day. A big group of panelists when the Ravens have six picks on Saturday. So that'd be very exciting as well. Hope you can join us for all of it. And we'll talk to you then on Film Study.